You know, let's get fresh blood, fresh ideas in. And, you know, so, you know, pay them a good salary in that, you know, let's attract good people, but let's also, you know, keep it fluid and let's have good people coming and going. I mean, I think that that is what's best for this country. It's what the country needs. We need to get rid of the career politicians who have spent, you know, 30, 40 years in. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And for all the listeners out there, you need to pick up the phone or send an email to your senators, to your congressmen, and express your views. Tell them that you're an educated voter, you're watching voter records, and these are your issues. You have more power than you may give yourself credit for, and it extends beyond merely voting in the polls. There's a lot of different ways to mobilize, to organize. Even something as simple as this, with a radio show and the social media pages, start to take your country back again. With me today is Del Wilber, national security expert and OPSEC colleague, vice president of intelligence, and we are going to look at the first 100 days of the Trump presidency and the accomplishments. First, though, I want to introduce our sponsor, Liberty Ammunition, one and done. It is U.S.-made green ammunition. There's a new training round, which is totally green, and the round pretty much turns to dust, much less expensive than ball ammo, great for target practice at less the cost. Please check it out on the website, www.libertyammunition.com. We thank Liberty Ammo for supporting Second Amendment rights and for sponsoring OPSEC Radio. Del, thanks for joining us on the show again.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
So the first 100 days, love him or hate him, Donald Trump has fulfilled a lot of his campaign promises and has done more in 100 days than Barack Obama had thought about during his 8 years of presidency. If this keeps up, we've got a lot of changes coming down the road.
Oh, absolutely. And I would add the caveat that it's not for lack of trying that he hasn't fulfilled even more of his promises. So, you know, he's certainly run into some, you know, some brick walls by the career politicians in Washington, D.C. that he's been up against in both parties. But it's certainly not for lack of trying that that he hasn't accomplished even more.
In the first 100 days, the President of the United States has fulfilled a bunch of his campaign promises. And again, the 100 days, it's a metric, whether it's a White House metric or a media metric, it doesn't matter. It could be 90 days, it could be 150 days. The point is, he's accomplished a lot in a short period of time, being shorthanded on the cabinet, having his appointments delayed. And why was it a surprise that he didn't go to the correspondence dinner with the way he's been treated by the media? Why was anybody surprised by that?
Oh, I thought it was great. I absolutely loved it. I was glad that he made the decision to go hold a rally with people who actually like him, you know, and who support him and who want to see him succeed. You and I both know that the fraudulent media out there, the traditional news outlets that have been around forever, they are absolutely in the tank for the Democrat Party, and they are absolutely doing everything they can to hinder his chances of success. And and that they're underreporting or not reporting at all, you know, the accomplishments that he's had in the first 100 days. You know, the thing that I'd like to add is that, you know, we don't elect a president for, you know, a little over 3 months. You know, we elect him for 4 years. And so this 100 days, I've always thought that that's, you know, that that's a silly a thing to focus on, because, you know, the president's going to be around for at least 4 years, if not, you know, eight. And, you know, it's just a I don't know where it became created or how, you know, whoever thought up the idea that, you know, that a president had to come in and accomplish all of his goals in the first 100 days is just not realistic.
Well, I think, yeah, exactly. And in spite of all the opposition of the media, some of the ultra-conservative Republicans and the ultra-alt-left Democrats, in spite of all that, he still has accomplished a tremendous amount. And the fact that he was able to reach across the aisle and reach a compromise that we're going to have a government in operation at least until September, that's an accomplishment in itself, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, when you think about, and I think I mentioned this once before, you know, the accomplishments, the things that that President Trump has achieved with regards to the VA and the choice program that he has been able to widen so that it's much more of a real choice for veterans. The rules of engagement for our military. Now, obviously, the message he sent with the mother of all bombs against an ISIS stronghold in Afghanistan, and that alone, I mean, you know from being a combat soldier that that stronghold, those caves and tunnel system, and that would have taken boots on the ground to clear out. It would have to have been done.
No doubt.
And probably at the cost of a lot of American lives, you know, when the time came. Well, that problem has been solved, and you know, certainly that action alone has prevented the you know, the loss of American military lives and casualties. So, I mean, he has certainly done a lot. He's not getting credit in the so-called mainstream media because they simply are doing everything they can to you know, to ruin his presidency if at all possible. So. You know, kudos to him for, you know, pushing ahead and continuing on with his efforts to drain the swamp.
And I think we're going to see more of this as, you know, if this is representative of the first 100 days, then I think we're going to have a tremendous amount accomplished by the end of his first term. And the more, and there's been key Democrats that have said this, that the more just the Democrats and some of the radical independents lean further and further left. And we saw that with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. They pushed the Democratic platform to ridiculously left to the point where, guess what? Donald Trump is in office. And I don't think that their platform or their view of politics and Pocahontas, Warren, you know, it's just going to almost guarantee, it's a long way from 2020, but if this keeps up, it'll guarantee that Trump gets a second term.
You know, I've often said this to, you know, when having discussions with people about the current state of politics in this country, but I've often said that were John F. Kennedy alive today, John F. Kennedy would be a Republican. The Democratic Party that he once belonged to is not even reflected in the current Democrat Party. The current Democrat Party is a hard left organization, and I mean it is, you know, one step away from pure socialism as far as I'm concerned. And you know, it's sad because I think the country really needs two vibrant and strong political parties so that people can have a choice and can look at the differences between the two. But the contrast between at least what the Republican Party espouses that it stands for and what the Democrat Party is now is I mean, it is night and day.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Certainly, Kennedy would be a Republican by today's standards, and he's probably spinning in his grave seeing what's been done to his Democratic Party. It's disturbing to me that so many Americans have given Barack Obama a pass, not only to elect him the first time, but to re-elect him, and then to tolerate all the anti-American, truly damaging acts that were anti-American, that undermined the national security of our country.
Oh, it was unbelievable, the things that that his administration did that was, you know, absolutely contrary to the best interests of the United States. You know, oftentimes he has been compared with, there was a running joke that, you know, Jimmy Carter, you know, can now relax that he's no longer the worst president in American history. But in fairness to Jimmy Carter, I still believe to this day, and I believed back then, that even though I disagreed with him and his policies and how he approached the presidency, I don't believe that Jimmy Carter did not have love in his heart for America. You know, he truly believed he was a patriot and that he loved his country and was doing what he felt was in the best interest of America. I don't believe that Barack Obama loved this country. He had a deep-seated hatred of what he viewed as America's oppressive past, and oppression that, in his view, continued on into current times. And I don't believe that he had a deep and abiding love in his country that all patriots like yourself and I and others and other presidents that served in that office have had. And I think that he was given a pass by the media that failed in their responsibility to point out why he was unfit and unqualified to hold the office way back in 2008 when he first ran. And it's a blot against the news media in this country that they allowed him to be elected president, you know, and they have some responsibility for the damage that's been done to this country by his administration.
Tremendously. And we talked about his associations with anarchists like Bill Ayers, who more than just association, he's a close friend. And Valerie Jarrett, who is clearly and openly an Islamicist and a supporter of Iran, they did everything within their power to embolden and enable Iran. And Iran has been responsible for the deaths of more Americans, directly and indirectly, since the bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon.
Well, Iran has been at war with the United States. They've been involved in a declared war against the United States since 1979. You know, I was a young spook when the Iranian-backed militia and I don't recall if it was Hezbollah but it was entities that were supported by the Islamic Republic of Iran, who drove that truck into the Marine barracks, but they also drove a truck into the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. I lost a good friend, a colleague of mine in Beirut at the embassy when it was bombed. So, and then their efforts to undermine and to attack the United States, to attack our interests, and to also attack us physically and violently have continued unabated, really, since 1979 up to the current times. And, Iran, as far as I'm concerned, poses the gravest threat, really, to the United States, because they are absolutely ruled by a fanatical theology or theocracy who they're more than willing to commit suicide to further their goal. They're on a mission from God in their eyes, and that scares me more than, you know, the nutcase in North Korea or the Russians or the Chinese.
It's far more difficult to defend against somebody who's willing to martyr themselves, which clearly Kim Jong-un is not.
No, I mean, he certainly poses a serious threat to our country, but, he's not inclined to cross that line, I think, that would bring bring hell down on his head, so to speak. He's not willing to cross that line. He wants to live a little bit longer. He enjoys his Coca-Cola and his hamburgers and his porno flicks. So he's not willing to give all that up. You know, he certainly will. I think, given the right amount of incentive from China, I think he'll eventually back down and hopefully we'll be able to keep him getting back in his cage. But yeah, what you described as martyrdom is what the Iranian theocracy lives for. So, you know, in their mind, I mean, they are. I encourage people to look up the term Twelvers and find out everything you can about it, because it'll tell you everything you need to know about the theocracy that's governing Iran right now and has been since 1979. They are committed to the return of the 12th Imam, who's been missing and hiding out in a cave for about 1,000 years or something like that. And, you know, he is their religious, their Messiah, in a sense. And they believe that he will return, and some cataclysmic event will hasten his return. So they're more than willing to bring that about. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, we were talking about the Obama administration and what they've done and how they have, if not openly, at least many of the things that they did, they aligned themselves with Iran, up to and including their abstention on the vote right in the last week of the Obama presidency that impacted our relations with Israel. And they certainly were no friend of the Israelis, and you know, and the Israelis have been our one true friend in the Middle East for decades, and so that shows you kind of the mentality that we were dealing with the Obama administration.
And I think it's good that the president has kept our adversaries off guard, where Obama drew red lines that were meaningless because they were never enforced. You know, it's like a child that's threatened with, you know, whatever, no TV, and then the parent relents. So nobody takes it seriously. Unfortunately, in world geopolitics, there's grave consequences for that. With our adversaries now, with Trump in office, they don't know where that red line is. It hasn't been drawn yet. And it hasn't been necessary, because certain consequences or certain actions beget certain consequences without any warning.
Well, right. We saw what happened when, you know, when the chemical weapons were used in Syria. I mean, there were repercussions.
And there was no warning.
And it was a message sent not just to the Syrians, but that message was sent to a lot of other people as well. And, you know, when you had Barack Obama in office, he was kind of like the little kid on the playground that kept having his lunch money taken away from him by the bullies, you know, and he wasn't willing to stand up to anybody. He would draw a line in the sand, and when they crossed it, he would just take a couple steps back and draw another line, you know, and that message was also received loud and clear by our enemies. And I like the strategy that Donald Trump is using now. He's basically saying, you know, I'm not telling you what I'm going to do. Piss me off and you'll find out.
Yeah, and it's okay if he gets criticized for that. Those are there, even on the conservative side, that have rebuked him or reviled him for this immature policy. I support it. I think it's wise politics on his part, and it keeps our enemies off guard and perhaps restrained, because they're not sure what the consequences will be, and they're not sure when or how they'll be delivered. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
I have seen on the news and that, and I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember a specific instance, but I've seen different things, you know, have occurred over the past, you know, years in the news, where, you know, they've talked about what we're going to do. And I have sat there and just scratched my head and said, why in the hell are we publicly telling, you know, our potential enemies and our real enemies what in the hell we're going to do in a certain instance. It's maddening. And I know you've probably seen the same, you know, the same examples where some politician or some military person, or whatever, have been talking about a particular issue, and they've literally, you know, offered up a possible strategy that we might use. And like I said, it just drives me crazy every time I see it. So I applaud President Trump for doing just the opposite and not telegraphing to our enemies, you know, what might even be on the, you know, on the table. I mean, let's just, you know, if it comes down to military action and that, you'll find out in due time what we're going to do. We're certainly not going to tip you off to what our hand is in the poker of politics, I guess.
Yeah, there's so much at stake. And even if you take the nuclear factor out of the Korean equation, the distance between the North Korean border and South Korea's capital of Seoul is like 30 miles. That's less than the distance between D.C. and Baltimore. And the North Koreans have 300 millimeter artillery pieces, the Katusha type multiple rocket. I mean, even if it's not a nuclear attack, a conventional attack on the Korean Peninsula would be devastating.
Well, and it also, you know, you being a combat veteran know that when you telegraph to your enemy what you're going to do or what you're thinking about doing, ultimately it ends up costing American lives. And that was, you know, something that, you know, is blood and treasure to us is the colleagues in that we've worked with and served with and that, you know, that are still in the game, so to speak, that have, you know, something on the line by having our government, you know, tip off the enemy to what we what our plans are or whatever. So, again, I applaud the president for, you know, for not victim, but you know, being drawn into that trap of you know, telegraphing what we're going to do to you know, or potentially what we might do to our enemies if they take a certain step. So, you know, kudos to him. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that was inexcusable what's been done in the previous administration, not just tipping our hand, but actively going and telling them exactly what we were going to do and when.
Well, and as you well know, the birth of the OPSEC organization was, you know, was centered around, you know, releasing, you know, highly sensitive operational information to making that information public, and that, which again puts lives at risk.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. For our listeners that may not have visited our website, you're listening to Del Wilbur and Jamie Williamson on OPSEC Radio on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Please go to the America Out Loud Network, look for OPSEC. You can listen online, podcasts, to all the shows. And also go to our website, OPSEC's website, at www.opsecteam.org. And you can learn a little bit about how we started the OPSEC organization and why, and the history behind it. The premise is to keep America safe, and it's made up of former intelligence community operators and special operations personnel. So please go and check that out. We're also on Facebook, Dishonorable Disclosures /OPSEC. And please like us and follow us on Twitter and all that great social media stuff. But please send it out to your friends. We want to build the listenership on the America Out Loud Network. And please learn about OPSEC Radio and what you can do to help keep America safe.
We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do. Include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
You know, that's, we were talking earlier about the 100 days, and I think something that needs to be mentioned about one of President Trump's accomplishments in his first 100 days is surrounding himself with some of the best people that I think, you know, you and I and anyone have seen, being brought into an administration in decades, if not longer. He has really surrounded himself with some first-class people. I mean, you look at General Mattis as his Secretary of Defense, and General Kelly is Secretary of Homeland Security. Rex Tillerson, his Secretary of State. I listened recently, just the other day, to an interview that Rex Tillerson did with Brett Baer from Fox News. And I listened with rapt attention. I mean, when he got done with that interview, I absolutely felt instilled with a sense of confidence and comfort. I slept better that night knowing that we had someone of his ability and character, handling the ship of state. And, I mentioned, General Kelly and General Mattis. And I just heard, I haven't got confirmation on it, but I heard that Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee is in line for a senior position with Department of Homeland Security in a position of basically, I think it's something to do with law enforcement outreach, reaching out, bringing the power of the federal government down to the state and local law enforcement level. That is absolutely critical, for our success in fighting the drug cartels in Mexico and in fighting the threat from Islamic extremists south of our border. With, you've got Hezbollah, and has a huge presence in the Western Hemisphere. So, it just seems like I said, along with the things that he's done with the VA and with the military and that, he has just surrounded himself with a first class team. And I think you'd agree with me on that.
Absolutely agree with you. And, the funny thing, Del, one of the, I don't want to say it's certainly not a failure, but he's been stalled in building the wall and getting the necessary funds appropriated for that. However, illegal immigration on the southern border is down 70%, 70%. And the wall hasn't even been built. The first block hasn't even been laid. This is just from a policy change and appointing Jeff Sessions and General Kelly. And, of all these guys you mentioned, Sessions was a politician, but General Kelly, General Mattis, Rex Tillerson, none of them are politicians. They're the right man or woman for the job, and they're being chosen not as a political reward, but exactly for the best person to defend this country, and whether it be to get jobs or foreign policy and diplomacy, I commend him on his choices. And I think you know, history will be the judge in hindsight. But I think that all these individuals, and Judge Gorsuch is that for we who are conservatives will probably have one of the most important and deep, long-lasting impacts on policy far beyond Trump's 4 years or perhaps 8 years. He's a young guy. He'll be around for a while. And with some of the other justices within the next 4 years, I suspect there'll be some other conservative appointments to the bench as well.
Oh, there's going to be some real pissed off Democrats.
Yes, there will be. More so than there are already.
It is really going to stick in their craw when we end up having a, you know, a 6-3 or a 7-2 Supreme.
Well, you know, this country always finds the center path. We swing a little left, we swing a little right. But we've always been able to right the ship. And sometimes I have my doubts about the constituency. You know, talked about how can it be possible that any voter with common sense or conscience, maybe that's the problem, would elect somebody with such anti-American sentiments or a questionable path. They're all worried about Donald Trump's taxes. For the love of God. Who cares about his taxes? Nobody cares about where Barack Obama came from, what country he was born in, his college thesis, and why so much money was spent to see all these records. Nobody asked the questions. Nobody in the responsible mainstream media. He was given a pass on everything.
Yeah, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I admire someone that can legally pay as little in taxes as possible. I sure as hell try to. You know?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I'm not going to fault President Trump if he was able to legally get by without paying a damn penny. You know, hey, so what? That's great for him. He did it legally. I'm sure he's got an entire stable of tax accountants and tax lawyers and that handle all of his tax accounting and that's wonderful. It costs him a ton of money, I'm sure, you know, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't have a problem with someone who is able to, if that's the case. But we know from the one tax return that was linked, I think from 2004 or 2005 or whatever, I mean, he paid a significant chunk of money. So
sure he did. You roll that forward. I do it myself. You know, I've had very successful business years. And I roll that forward for taxes that I paid and losses that I've taken. It's an up and down kind of thing. Why would anybody? And he's done it on a much larger scale than you or I or most Americans. But again, it's economy of scale. Why wouldn't you take advantages of the law as it's written?
I am much more concerned about where someone's loyalties lie and what their ideology is than I am about what they did as far as taxes. And as you mentioned, Barack Obama was given a pass by the media when there were red flags all over the place about his ideology and about his where his loyalties truly lie. And he was, like I said, the news media just absolutely. I mean, they didn't just not report on all of the questionable things from Obama's past. They helped cover it up. And, the American news media, much of it anyway, they absolutely should be ashamed of themselves for, you know, they went out of their way to promote him as a candidate and as a president than they did to try to do their job, which is to report the news accurately and fairly.
More like the Manchurian candidate. And not to get off on the whole birther trail, but, you know, as an example, the media screamed about, oh, is Ted Cruz a Canadian citizen? And John McCain was born in the Canal Zone. Is he eligible to run? it doesn't matter where Obama was born. What I'm getting at is nobody asked the question. And not just asking the question, like you said, they covered it up. It's part of this conspiracy. And again, like anything else, follow the money.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, and anybody that tried to question it or tried, you know, tried to encourage some sort of responsibility on the news media's part, you know, they were called, you know, birthers. They were called, you know, racist, haters, whatever. I mean, you know, they were ridiculed. I mean, Trump himself was ridiculed, you know, because, you know, he questioned, you know, the status of Barack Obama, you know, where he was born and that. So, you know, and those were actually very legitimate and reasonable questions that should be asked of every candidate for such a high office. You know, we have a right as citizens to know that the individuals who are running for the presidency are qualified, that they meet the minimum qualifications. And you know, it's not wrong to question that and to ask for someone to verify their citizenship and their record. So it really ticks me off when I hear the people those questions being ridiculed.
Well, of all the laws that are speaking, that's another thing. The 2-for-1 for every new piece of legislation, 2 have to be eliminated for everyone that's. Well, why doesn't somebody, if it's so important to know what a private citizen who's running for the highest office of the country, if it's so important to know what that individual's personal taxes are, then why don't we pass legislation to make it mandatory? And why don't we legislate that, in fact, that any candidate demonstrates conclusively proof that he or she is eligible to hold that office as the Constitution requires? And why would the media not ask that?
As far as I'm concerned, I'm more interested in where, you know, where his real birth certificate, because the one that was posted on the White House website has been proven to be a forgery, a fabrication, but where his real birth certificate is, why he chose to post a fabrication on the website, and where his college records are, his Selective Service card, and the 30-some thousand missing emails of Hillary Clinton. I'm more interested in seeing all of that information than I am Donald Trump's tax returns.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the impact of somebody's tax returns has far less impact on the security of this country than all those other things, singularly or combined.
Can you imagine if Mitt Romney or John McCain had deleted 30,000 emails? Can you imagine the outrage of the news media?
Or if they were found with top secret information on their personal home computers.
It would have been thunderous, the outrage.
We know the tip of the iceberg of what was found, but you know, the bulk of it, we have no idea.
Can you imagine if George W. Bush had visited Donald Trump or John McCain when he was running, or Mitt Romney when he was running, on a airport tarmac in Phoenix, and discussed with him something while, you know, a family member was under indictment or under investigation, the outrage of the news media would have been thunderous. And I don't care what anybody says. I am absolutely convinced that you know, Bill Clinton sent a message to Barack Obama through Loretta Lynch that you know, if Hillary was indicted, there was going to be 30,000 emails were going to be released, and many of those emails had Barack Obama's signature on them. So, in fact, I was told that I won't, because it was mentioned in confidence, so I can't tell the individual's name, but. You know him, and he's certainly was in a position to have that information, And this was back in, you know, a year ago, long before it came out that that Hillary, that some of her missing emails that were recovered. It very clearly, I was told that that Barack Obama was implicated in those emails. And as it turns out, in fact, he had, you know, communicated with Hillary and using a pseudonym. So so there's no doubt in my mind that that a veiled threat or an overt threat was given, that if Hillary goes down, she's taking a whole lot of people with her.
Oh, yeah, and that's par for the course as far as the Clintons, all the way back to Arkansas days. And apparently a lot of people have been taken down, and not just politically.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? But, you know, it's, like I said, it's, they are absolutely, in my mind, you know, the most corrupt and despicable politicians in American history. And they, we need to be rid of them. You know, the Clintons need to be.
They're a cancer.
They are. They're a cancer in the political life of this country, and they, we need to be rid of them once and for all.
I was a teenager during the Watergate hearings. I was young Republican, and you know, had conservative leanings as a child or as a young teenager, and I felt sold out. I felt betrayed by when it was conclusively proven that Richard Nixon had broken the law. In retrospect, Nixon looks like a choir boy compared to the
Clintons.
Oh, absolutely.
What the Clintons have done, I mean, what Nixon did pales in comparison to what Hillary did just in her tenure with the Obama administration. So, I mean, it is, it's just unbelievable that the American news media, a very large percentage of it, the traditional networks and media outlets have been so corrupted ideologically. They absolutely pursue a political agenda, an ideological agenda, and they do not report the news fairly and accurately anymore.
Well, the trend now is political assassination through maligning people, spreading false news, rumor and innuendo. Regardless of, yeah, you know, I mean, look at this whole nonsense about the Russians. The Russians, you know, if it rained on my wedding day, it was the Russians. And that became the mantra of the left. The Russians are coming. The Russians are behind this. The Russians control this person. Now they're, you know, they killed Flynn. They had done their best to do the same thing to Jeff Sessions. Now they've turned onto Gorka. And then the same thing with the media. It applies. I'm not defending. I think where there's smoke, there's fire. But you know, if they can put pressure, public pressure, to get an individual, and of course I'm referring to Bill O'Reilly. I don't think Bill O'Reilly's a choir boy, but the same trend of character assassination. This has become the new tactic of the left. Like Joseph Goebbels said, if you tell lies often enough, people believe them.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I don't think there's anybody. I certainly, you know, I certainly haven't been an angel my entire life. And if people wanted to dig up enough, you know, or dig deep enough, they could probably find something on me. You know, I mean, I tore the tag off of a pillow once, you know, that I bought from the store, and that clearly told me that, subject to penalty of law, I couldn't remove it, you know. And I've jaywalked.
Mike Lindell will come after you.
I've jaywalked before and got away with it. I imagine I've probably run a stoplight or two and speeded in my life, and you know, all those things would come back to haunt me because they would be magnified and blown way out of proportion to what reality is. And that's why it's difficult for people, you know, I would never run for office because I would not want to put my family through that media meat grinder. And that's what's sad, because there truly are probably some very good people out there who would be willing to serve their country, and would really give it their all to try to serve their constituency and serve the country in that. But they just don't want to go through the media meat grinder that it's become, and you can't blame them.
Well, you know, a good example, the former president of OPSEC, friend of both of ours, Congressman Scott Taylor. I'm not going to mention the incumbent congressman's name, but he was running out of his district because he probably wouldn't have been reelected. And you know, and Scott's big fight was in the primary, not in his general election. But there were all these charges. He was accused of felonies. This is part of the campaign. And the quote-unquote felonies, which, of course, were not felonies, he had some speeding tickets. Is a candidate that desperate that's going to take an individual? I mean, who hasn't had a traffic violation? And twist that. And this was another Republican.
But they know that the media will evaluate which candidate is least, if it's a Republican, which candidate is least distasteful to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll support that candidate by innuendo, distortion, whatever it takes. Of course, you know, if it's a Republican, whichever Republican wins, the media's going to be against them in the general election anyway. But they'll, you know, like I said, even when it comes down to the primaries, they will, you know, they'll distort and twist and exaggerate and criticize, you know, using innuendo on that, a candidate that is someone that the media just absolutely, you know, can't tolerate. And, you know, likely that was the case with Scott, you know, he was a candidate that the media just absolutely, you know, were afraid of. So they'll distort and twist. I mean, and politicians are, that's why I'm, maybe you don't agree with me, and there's probably a lot of listeners that don't agree with me, but I am absolutely an advocate for term limits. I think we've got to get back to a citizen legislature where people don't go to Washington, D.C. for 30, 40 years because they just become corrupted by the system. And we need to get back to people that are voting their conscience, that are serving their constituents and their communities. And, you know, they do, you know, 12 years. I mean, I've advocated for, you know, two 6-year terms in the Senate and, you know, 6 2-year terms in the House, you know, 12 years, 12 and out. You know, you go, you do your best to serve your community and your country, and then you make room for someone else to come in. If you still feel a calling, you know, you can, if you run for Congress and you still feel a calling to serve, fine, then run for the Senate, run for a different office, or come back to your community and run for a state, for a local office, you know. Find someone who is, you know, if we might lose some good people, but you know what? If they're that good and they care about their country, then they'll make sure that someone who is like them follows them.
And they serve in other ways. You know, you look at an individual, Newt Gingrich comes to mind. Whether you agree with him or not, he's a brilliant and educated individual. He served his time, and he still continues to serve in a different way. You can call him a pundit, a commentator, whatever, but it will take a grassroots movement. And you know, I've been through this before with, you know, the Tea Party. The Tea Party was treated poorly, was disrespected, particularly by the Republican Party. The Democrats never paid much mind to the Tea Party except to try to mitigate any influence that they had. But what happened was the pushback of the voters, and the Tea Party gained seats in the House and Congress. And then the next step was you know, at your own peril, disregard the voters. And certainly Hillary Clinton fell victim to that. And certainly the Republican Party fell victim to that. That's why Donald J. Trump is sitting in the Oval Office right now. And I think this is the start of the wave. This is the start of the trend.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, I like the and I'm not going to quote it exactly accurate, but it was actually former President Harry S. Truman, a Democrat, who said no politician ever got rich legally, or something to that effect. And you know, and how could someone like Hillary Clinton, who's never held a job outside of government other than a short tenure with a law firm down in Arkansas, how did she become a mega millionaire, you know?
Yeah, or Joe Biden, who has a mansion and tons of acres in Monchan and Delaware. Do the math. His salary alone, and of course will still continue to pay, whether a one-term congressman still gets salary for life. What's wrong with that picture? But it's not going to be until individuals can mobilize themselves and start a grassroots movement saying, you've been a great congressman to us, but you know what? We're not going to support you unless you support term limits or you support these legislative changes, abolish of salary for life. Term limits, whatever that cause, and it'll be, look what the left did to fight talk radio, through FCC regulations, and they are scared to death of conservative talk radio, because it influences people.
Yeah, you know, it's like I said, I don't fault. Paying a good salary to our elected officials. I don't fault them having a nice pension plan or a nice benefits net. You know, I don't have a problem with all that, as long as we had good people who, you know, really devoted their efforts to serving their community or serving the country. You know, I think they should be rewarded, because we want to have the best, you know, the best and brightest running for political office. So let's compensate them. I don't have a problem with that. But by God, they need to start earning it, and they need to earn it for a dozen years and leave. You know, let's get fresh blood, fresh ideas in. And, pay them a good salary net, you know, let's attract good people, but let's also, you know, keep it fluid, and let's have good people coming and going. I mean, I think that is what's best for this country. It's what the country needs. We need to get rid of the career politicians who have spent, you know, 30, 40 years in. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And for all the listeners out there, you need to pick up the phone or send an email to your senators, to your congressmen, and express your views. Tell them that you're an educated voter, you're watching voter records, and these are your issues. You have more power than you may give yourself credit for, and it extends beyond merely voting in the polls. There's a lot of different ways to mobilize, to organize, even something as simple as this with a radio show and the social media pages. Start to take your country back again.
Absolutely. And you know what? Support, you know, the politicians that are doing a good job, and that send the message to them that, you know, that you support term limits, but you'll support them, you know, if they support term limits, and support the types of, you know, businesses and that offer espouse the same types of you know, views that you hold, you know. And I mean, listen to, you know, the advertisers. I mean, the people that bring products and that to the market, that, you know, that that support your views and that, you know, we have to make it a combined effort to take the country back. And you're only going to do that by supporting the politicians, the businesses, the advertisers, whatever, that will help us achieve the goal that we're looking to achieve. And that's, you know, a stronger country, and a country that and a government that we that serves us, because they all work for us ultimately.
Well said, well said. Del Wilber, thanks for being with us. This show has addressed the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. Been brought to you by our sponsor, Liberty Ammunition, at libertyammunition.com. And for all the listeners, we know you can buy ammo anywhere. You can get it at the store. You can buy it online. But please support somebody who supports you. Liberty Ammunition is a conservative organization that supports our law enforcement officers and our military. And they've arranged a special deal for you on their website. If you buy online from them, when you check out, enter the code OPSEC15. That's OPSEC numbers 15 for a 15% discount. And please do spread the word about the radio show. And I encourage you to download the app. You can find it on our website on the America Out Loud Radio Network under OPSEC Radio. And thank you for tuning in again.